And although I believe that in liberal democracies where there is a great deal of transparency, that risk is relatively low, I could see in some autocratic countries that the risk for corruption is quite high in the space sector. There is an element not so much relating to space technology, but the space industry in itself as a potential victim of corruption, which should be dealt with.
Hey, space watchers. This is Space Cafe Radio, your channel about trends, awesome events, and interesting people in the space sector. Getting us outside our comfort zone is very important, as they say. But isn't it much more easier to stay within? Stay within our area of work, our expertise? If you had a chance to follow the presentation of our editor-in-chief, Dr. Emma Gatti, you heard a very clear messaging. Leave your bubble. Or, as she called our newest monthly newsletter, nobody cares about your satellite. Maybe a harsh statement, but seeing how mainstream press reports about space, about great and needed tests as total failure, it shows there is a need to break out of our bubble. And so I did. At the Munich Security Conference, I met the director of Transparency International, Dr. Daniel Eriksson, in an open source intelligence from space session. I was curious to learn how they are using imagery today. So we set up this Space Cafe Radio for you. But listen to this episode to learn more. I'm Thorsten, publisher of Spacewatch.global. Buckle up and enjoy this unique session. Hey, Space Watchers, and welcome back to our Space Cafe Radio. Today, we will walk a bit outside our own comfort zone. We do believe that it is very important to also step outside and invite people to a wider dialogue. Today, I have the great pleasure to talk with Dr. Daniel Eriksson, the director of Transparency International here in Berlin. So, Daniel, first of all, thank you very much for your time and welcome to the Space Cafe.
Thanks for having me here, Thorsten.
So how are you doing today?
Good. It's very busy. A lot of things going on in the anti-corruption world and in the corruption world at the moment. But we're working hard to do our job and fight corruption.
That's a great into my first question. So as we have primarily a space affine audience, maybe you can tell our audience what the our NGO, Transparency International, is doing.
So Transparency International is an international movement that fights corruption. We work with chapters, local offices, you can call it, in 100 countries. We've been around for about 30 years. We're most famous for the index that we produce annually, which is called the Corruptions Perception Index. But in reality, the vast majority of what we do is advocacy on national, regional, and global levels to ensure that it becomes harder, riskier, and more costly to be corrupt. And we do that partly through an acronym that we call SHE, S-H-E. We're making it harder for the corrupt to steal money. We're making it harder for the corrupt to hide that proceeds. And we're making it harder for them to enjoy what they have stolen. And thus, through that work, we have a vision of a world free from corruption that we work towards.
So a world free of corruption, that sounds quite as an illusion, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's as long as we'll have humans on the planet, there will be a level of corruption. But at the same time, if the right systems are in place and the right technology, it will be ever more difficult to hide the fact that you are corrupt as a politician. And one usually says that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and that's something that kind of works on corruption as well. When there is transparency and visibility into what's happening, it is really hard to be corrupt.
We met almost a month ago in Munich at the Munich Security Conference. And I think that was in one of the sessions, spotlight sessions, that focused a bit on space, whereby space was not a main topic there at all. That might be on the open source intelligence or the global commons. So How do you use Intransparency International or space imagery today for your work?
It's a relatively easy question to answer. Unfortunately, we do not use remote sensing or space imagery or any specific space technology, but we're looking into it to introduce it in some areas of our work. We have 7 strategic pillars that we work according to. One of them is law enforcement and ending impunity, where we work together with investigative journalists and the OSINT community to investigate how the corrupt steal and hide and enjoy the money so that we can have a more up-to-date methodology in doing our advocacy for changing regulations and laws around the world. And in there, I can see other organizations like the OCCRP, Bellingcat, and so forth, successfully using remote sensing as a tool. And I think we can do more in that as well. Another pillar where remote sensing and space technology could have an impact is the one that we call protecting the public's resources, where we have everything from public procurement to natural resources to climate change. And particularly in the area of the intersect between corruption and the global response to climate change through carbon credits and large infrastructure projects, green energy projects, and so forth, I think that there is a role for remote sensing as a means of doing investigations. So definitely, I would be interested in ideas from other organizations on what could be done in order to use space technology for anti-corruption.
The entire remote sensing arena is, as you told me earlier, not new for you. So you are very familiar about the capacities. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your experience in that field.
25 years ago, I did my PhD on remote sensing, GIS, and data mining in general for the purpose of improving decision-making in and around humanitarian programs and humanitarian responses to natural disasters. And as such, I worked with the military IMINT community and with governmental institutions. My research was funded by the European Commission. And I know a fair amount about remote sensing and about GIS and what it could be used for in these areas. And back then, and as things go very fast in that business, back then we were exploring the use of such technology to monitor and detect illegal fisheries, to monitor and detect fraud in agricultural subsidies and illicit agriculture in general. So there's plenty of areas where I've seen the potential. And following my PhD, I spent more than 10 years in mine action, humanitarian demining and post-conflict reconstruction, where remote sensing also was a very central theme. I have a solid background, and I would be very keen to take an opportunity of using such technology in anti-corruption if I could find a good way of doing so.
Maybe you can evaluate kind of a use case that would work for you, because in our listenership, we have many of the space companies that are interested in our programs. And many of them, they at least articulate that they are looking for ways to work with NGOs together, with organizations with a purpose, with a good purpose. And I would put you in this corner. How could a case for you look like that makes sense?
This is more on a brainstorm stage. I can't say that we have any written papers or concrete ideas implemented yet, but as I mentioned earlier on law enforcement and ending impunity, I could see as TI, we have a challenge at the moment. For the last 3 or 4 years, we've had a challenge in that more and more countries we have to close down because the government does not want us there. We have to evacuate staff and we have to leave and we have to operate from exile, like in Russia most recently, but in many other countries as well. And if we are to do investigations from outside the country, having access to good remote sensing, high resolution satellite imagery to look at items such as big infrastructure projects or mansions or whatever the rich and famous corrupt individuals would be investing the money in, could be very useful to see if public procurement has been made in a shoddy way or if the stolen money has gone into to lavish private gain projects, whatever that might be, yachts and mansions, etc. So that's one area where, inspired by the way what I saw at the Munich Security Conference with regards to Bellingcat and others, how they had used remote sensing. That's a clear area. And then, as I also mentioned early on, our work on climate and corruption, where we could use remote sensing to look at large infrastructure projects to see, are they actually being implemented? Are they implemented to the extent or the quality that they were supposed to be done? Things that obviously could be measured on the ground, but it's not always that we can actually go and visit projects on the ground. Then third, and less advanced, more pedestrian, let's call it, an area where we always seen a lot of corruption is cadastral management, land rights, land use.
How do you see corruption in this particular field? So for a naive soul like me.
In the developing part of the world, knowing who owns which part of land and having somebody in government who sits and decides how parcels of land are being divided is a process that is very volatile to corruption. You can pay somebody to transfer a piece of land, or you can change, especially if these systems are not digitized, you can change these parcels and how they look like and thereby grab land, or you can have rich individuals or large multinational corporations coming in, buying up land from incorrect landowners or absorbing land in unfair processes. And to if one could have better cadastral management in terms of measuring these parcels on the ground, but also potentially using remote sensing as a complement to that process to better define who owns what on a national level, this could be an interesting project in order to counter corruption, specifically as what I'm talking about now, in cadastral management.
You mentioned in our pre-talk that you can't see money from space. And I think that also goes for who owns the land or not. I mean, you need people on the ground. You need access to the cadastre offices or registry offices and so on and so forth, and to match it. One area that I came along, and that might be something potentially newer for you, Earth observation technology developed. It is not just the optical bands. We're talking about hyperspectral imageries and SAR images. And the big thing is to fuse these data together to, as you mentioned, to track yachts, even when they switch off their IS signals as dark ships, to be able to track them throughout the entire seas. And coming back from the DJI conference in London earlier this week, I could see a few really unclassified showcases on that term where I said, wow, that is really valuable technology. Okay, that all comes for a price without any doubt. But if there is someone that is interested to help, how could they? How open are you for this dialogue if someone knocks on your door and want to present this kind of technologies?
We are open. At the same time, we have to realize that we are an NGO and we're living off donated money and we cannot jump on every project. We have very limited resources and certainly no funding. We have limited amount of staffing that we can work with. Mm-hmm. But if there is an interesting idea and somebody comes, knocks on our door, and we can contribute our skill sets in corruption with somebody who can provide a technological approach, then if we can find them, most commonly a donor who can then finance this intersect, then this could be a project that could benefit our work and the work of the partner as well. That's definitely an avenue. Another avenue is via partnerships with academic institutions as a facilitator in this as well. There's many avenues. And when you speak about the detection of dark ships, that was actually one of the areas that we worked on when I was with the European Commission in 2001, where we used SAR specifically to detect dark ships. And that was large fishing vessels that we detected through the wake patterns. So it's been possible for a quarter of a century. And I wonder where the community is now, 25 years later, in that capacity. But I'm also thinking, on another area, by the way, that this technology clearly could be useful, and that's sanctions evasions and the use. Dark ships could also be oil transports or military goods transports. But that's not very center in our attention as Transparency International. I think there's other organizations that are more interested in that. Once again, we focus on the money. We see corruption as the definition, as the abuse of entrusted power for personal gain. And so long as what's happening is fulfilling that definition. We look into it and we work on it. But our primary method of attack, let's call it, is through advocacy, through changing laws, through changing the prerequisites of the setup so that it becomes harder, rather than going after corrupt individuals, because we know that if the system is broken and you get one corrupt individual thrown out or arrested, there's 100 more waiting to take their place. The system has to change and not only the individuals.
Tell us, who are your donors? You mentioned them before. And how big is Transparency International globally? How many people work for the organization?
We're a movement, meaning that we have the secretariat in Berlin, where I'm based and that I'm head of. And then we have legally independent members, offices you can call them, but they use our brand, most of them, not all of them, and they're members of our global organization. We have 100 member organizations in an equal amount of countries, and then we have other forms of presence in an additional 15 countries. In total, we're approximately 2,000 full-time staff working around the world across these seven areas that the strategy outlines. And we've been doing so for over 30 years now. And we are the world's largest coalition against corruption.
The countries where you reside are funding you, or are these private donors?
Funding-wise, it's different on national, regional, and global levels. On the global level, it is governments that predominantly fund us. I'd say almost 95% of the work that we do today are projects. So those are projects that we tendered for or proposed to governments or international institutions, the EU, the US. We have Sweden, Denmark, Germany. The list is quite long, providing us funding to implement specific projects that span a wide spectrum of activities, of capacity building, primarily in the global south, which is a bit challenging. Because what we're seeing now, as we heard several times in Munich, when corruption is becoming a bigger problem in the global north, in Europe and North America, we need to do more work there as well. And in Europe and North America, our main donors tend to be corporations or individuals, because governments, they're using the ODA, the Official Development Aid, to support our work in the global south. And that obviously cannot be used in the global north. Mm-hmm. So we have to balance that out.
Thank you very much for that clarification. You mentioned the projects, and I thought about, and also your heritage with ESA, why aren't the space agency / academics are more behind it and offering their work? Are there any reason I can't see, or didn't that just not happen so far?
I think it just didn't happen so far. We're a large organization with a complicated history, I was about to say, but it could very well be that on a national level in one or more countries that there's been work that I'm not aware of. But it's also, as I said earlier on, corruption tends to be a not very visible phenomenon, that it's money or power shifting hands, and nepotism will never be visible on any imagery. The largest part of our work is following money, data in systems. And space technology has not played a central role in that. Then there's another aspect of it as well, which is maybe also interesting, that there's obviously what I mentioned to you early on, that one of the surefire ways of ensuring that you have corruption is to spend a lot of money quickly. But there's also the issue of spending a lot of money quickly and opaquely. What do I mean with opaque? Spending on defense and security, for instance, is often done in secret in countries. And that makes it very difficult for the public or even law enforcement to go in and look at data and see if there is corruption. Another element next to defense and security are areas where you need additional knowledge, where only those who sit in certain types of expertise can judge whether an expenditure was corrupt or not. So in the health sector, for instance, that is a common situation. But, and here's my long intro ending up with, the space sector can be an area where corruption can easily take hold, because you need certain skill sets and insights in order to assess whether a certain expenditure has been affected by corruption or not. And although I believe that in liberal democracies where there is a great deal of transparency. That risk is relatively low. I could see in some autocratic countries that the risk for corruption is quite high in the space sector. There is an element not so much relating to space technology, but the space industry in itself as a potential victim of corruption, which should be dealt with.
The space sector, and I cite it as really as part of the space sector as well, is taking themselves for too important sometimes. The cool thing is that everyone has an opinion about space or dinosaurs. I mean, you never can go wrong with that. Everyone likes it, hates it, has at least an opinion. And what we see over the last years is the attractiveness of space worldwide, because everyone wants to have a piece of the cake when it comes to access to space, to resources in space. And here I see the potential threats are for the future. Even so, much of that is regulated. But if we look into the Outer Space Treaty and talking about space resources, then we have an area that it's lacking for regulations. And that's something that we are after as well, and try to get as transparent about that as we can.
Yeah, it's large public procurements on space technology is one area. But another area is privatization of space technology, which is also prone to corruption. So there's that dimension to it as well. It's not only space and the benefits of space technology to the fight against corruption. It's also the need for the space industry to look itself in the mirror and ask the question, are we doing everything we can in order to ensure that we follow democratic principles and principles of transparency in our own industry in order to prevent that corruption seeps into our industry? Because once it does, it is really difficult to get rid of it. And we see that in Russia, in the defense sector, in other sectors as well.
And we see also that as space technology evolves, and it's not just for the good guys to use it, also the bad guys using it. Daniel, thank you very much for your time and this very open conversation. It helps us to understand where we are as space sector in your world. And we hope that there will be a way in that we can help your work to be more efficient and more concrete. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Torsten. And I hope that some of your listeners will reach out to us with ideas on how we can use space technology in the fight against corruption. Thank you so much.
I bet on that. Take good care. Thank you.
Bye.
If you have further questions, reach out to us at radio@spacewatch.global. If you like these or other episodes of Space Cafe Radio, leave us a rating on your preferred podcast platform. It is the currency of today. And if you want to stay on the pulse of the space industry, please visit our website at www.spacewatch.global and subscribe to our newsletters. And of course, don't forget to become a Space Watcher. I'm Torsten Kreening, publisher at spacewatch.global, your independent perspective on space.